Good evening, and welcome to the 80 Page Cast. I'm Rob London.
I was sent in a capsule from a place not from here, and I came here for one reason: comic books!
And I'm David Hanyon.
I'm just Jen Olm.
I'm Matt Karpowicz.
All that fall into water turn into man thanks to instant nanichuan powder. That's an excerpt from Ram Mahaf by Andrew Sorahan.
What? We've got five tonight.
It's a full house here at the 80 Page Cast.
Aw, man. But
I suppose on. That's...
Now I've got to work out how we're divided here. So who's the aces and then who's the jacks?
I'm that card at the beginning that you have to throw it because it has like the rules of stud poker.
Well, that doesn't make a full house. You've ruined the metaphor already, and we just need to get on with the episode, apparently.
I play cribbage. I'm not really good at cards. All right, well,
you can't be Ace then, because he's an awesome giant robot.
Ah. Or Batman's dog.
Or a companion of the Doctor.
Should be Batman's dog, the awesome giant robot. Just a giant robot dog.
What, like Ravage?
Yeah. Except Ravage is a cat.
Same difference. I'm pretty sure I've read stuff where he's a dog. And that's canon.
Carnivac.
Yeah, Carnivac.
Carnivac's a giant robot dog.
Yeah. Right. And he's a wolf.
Shush.
Kind of dog. So it's appropriate that we have the biggest episode ever, or at least a tie for the biggest episode ever, because our leading news item is that Marvel is launching their biggest crossover ever. And that is Secret Wars.
Oh, man.
But that's from the 80s.
It's a new Secret Wars.
Okay.
So is it going to have the Beyonder learning how to poop?
Probably not, although fingers crossed.
As long as there's a subplot where Spidey has to get rid of some gold, I'm happy.
Well, we also have to teach someone how to use the toilet?
Yes.
We already covered that, goddammit. You weren't listening.
Do we actually know much about the new Secret Wars event other than it's coming?
The Marvel Universe is ending. The Ultimate Marvel Universe is also ending. Everything will be destroyed.
It's so, kind of crisis-y when it comes down to it.
Yeah, it's a new 52 crisis thingamabob they're claiming anyway.
We've already seen a couple of spin-off books. Battle Worlds will have, it's sort of the usual Marvel tie-in where they have a bunch of sort of indie artists do the craziest thing they can think of. So yeah. They've already pitched that one issue will feature MODOK recruiting an army of extra-dimensional MODOKs.
That's
I think they've
awesome.
Already done that story like two or three times.
Yeah, but
well, now they're doing it here.
Okay.
Yeah, now, well, you know they're doing it with MODOK instead of Kang.
You know what they say: MODOKs, mo problems.
Who says that?
I say that.
Kang. I believe only one specific Canadian.
Only
it's gonna
one.
Catch on, though.
Sure. Sure.
And, maybe it'll catch on with 4chan.
Yeah.
I'd rather not catch on in that case.
Get it? Mo docs? Because when you dox somebody? Yeah, see what I did there?
Boo.
Actually, it's about ethics in mental organisms designed only for killing.
Yeah.
And the other tie-in... you know, probably some. I don't know. Anyway, the other tie-in that's been announced is Ultimate End, in which Brian Michael Bendis and Mark Bagley created the Ultimate Universe, and now they're going to kill it.
Finally putting it to bed. It's about... How long has it been running?
It's been a while.
Like 15 years.
That's, you know, way longer than it should have.
That's like really? 15 years longer than the new universe.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. It's fascinating because Marvel has had these experiments in the past multiple times. You had the new universe, you had 2099, you had, what was it, M2 or something?
MC2.
Yeah, M2. Yeah.
And of course, all of those universes will be involved in the Secret Wars. In the teaser images, we've seen guys from the Shadow Line. MC2 guys.
We are talking about the Shadow Line this time?
Yes, we are talking about the Shadow Line. Because that teaser image does
Doctor
have
Zero is in a
Doctor Zero,
is on a cover,
Saint George, and the Power Line.
I need to look that up.
Yeah.
Does it have anything from Razor Line in it?
No, that's creator owned.
Lame.
Star Comics?
I don't know what Star Comics. Obnoxio the Clown is on that cover as well.
They
so
really
I don't think
need
anything's
to take
off limits
this,
here.
They really need to take this chance to roll Royal Roy into the regular Marvel Universe.
That's the guy who's just Richie Rich, except, no, actually, he's just Richie Rich.
That is correct.
No, he's clearly just actually Richie Rich.
Even though, which is impressive, because everybody hates Richie Rich.
It's true.
I mean, everybody should hate Richie Rich at the very least.
He is the 1%.
No, I wrote an article about how much I hate Richie Rich for our blog, and one of the comments, and I think it may be the only comment, is saying how it's okay that you don't love him anymore, but give it time and you'll come back and you'll love him again. And I'm just like, what?
So
I'm going to become a born-again Richie Riches? What's going on here?
Half of Richie Rich out there
so
wandering the internet?
There are people who actually still like Richie Rich. It just
That's
blows my mind.
Terrifying.
Royal Roy has one thing up on Richie Rich because he wears pants.
This is true. Anyway, this is the point where I will say that due to my tangential involvement with this, as per my Marvel Handbook work, I can't do any speculation in regards to Secret Wars. So all I can tell you
is
that I am from beyond. Slay your enemies, and all you desire shall be yours. Nothing
okay,
you dream of is impossible for me to accomplish.
That's fantastic, but can you lay out the facts that are known publicly
I
so far?
I just told you the publicly.
That's pretty much
facts.
It. There's a couple
Earth
of tie-ins.
Battle World.
Combining.
Bunch of alternate universe Marvel characters will be fighting each other.
Okay, so my estimation here is that what we're looking at is a ton of hype, a bunch of Tumblr squealing, probably a couple of Twitter wars, and then everything will be back to normal by the end.
Well, there's a few things like
what?
Peter Parker's getting his marriage back, unless that's coming out of the Spider-Verse, but it's probably going to be the Secret Wars. Or wait, do we know a time for that? We've seen a cover for the wedding issue, haven't we?
Can't tell you.
There was an image at some point. So he's getting married again. Miles Morales is probably going to stick around somehow.
He's been on the covers.
Yes, the Ultimate Universe, that's gone. It's dead. Miles is the only thing left from it that's still good.
Yeah, I mean, it basically looks like a lot of that stuff they're sort of salvaging from the Ultimate Universe.
So it's not without precedent. I mean, the new universe was scrapped and they destroyed it in a war and they salvaged the Star brand out of the new universe as basically the only thing worth keeping.
Well, they brought him back and a couple of the other guys are in Avengers now wandering.
Night Mask is also in Avengers.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Sadly, no Kickers Inc.
Aww.
What about Psyforce? I actually really like Psyforce. They're basically Captain Planet, but the kids hate each other instead of being cloying awful things.
And also they form like a Native American guy instead of a blue
yes,
dude.
Yes, they summon a giant, super powerful Native American. That's
named Psyhawk.
Right, the Psyhawk.
Yeah.
Oh, probably really do.
Is that a better or worse name than Psylocke?
To be fair, he is at least the ghost of an actual Native American, as opposed to just randomly their powers create a Native American.
well, if it was a spirit who was here before the Europeans, then, you know.
The point I'm trying to make is that the status quo changes after these big events, and it's not going to be... people are getting a bit upset about this whole Secret War thing, but it's not going to be the status quo change people think it is. It's not going to be like a New 52 rewrite. No. I don't think Marvel
would ever go that far. If anything...
Well, if they do, I'm done. Freaking rage quit. Time to rage quit. Bye, Marvel. I'm going to stick to reading Hal Foster at that point. No, I'm kidding. I can't stop myself.
If anything, the notable changes will probably make it more like the movie universe.
Yeah.
So maybe there will have never been a white Nick Fury.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Maybe the ultimate Nick Fury will permanently replace him.
But I like the white Nick Fury.
Is that a racist enough accent for you?
Yeah. Well, you do still have Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. from Spider-Ham's universe.
Yeah.
Oh, are they rolling Spider-Ham into the main Marvel universe as well?
Spider-Ham has been in Spider-Verse.
Yeah, he's had quite a few.
Only if they bring in Captain America. That's all I want.
Honestly, my favorite pun there was the Shocker analog, who is a dog, and thus he is the Shocker.
No, you can't go Captain America.
How about Frank Catfish, the pun fisher?
Yeah, see? Captain America makes you smile.
You said you weren't going to talk about this part.
I hate puns until I love them.
I'm not speculating. I'm just giving you old puns from the 80s.
Yeah.
Okay, so what other news is there?
All right, well, we have casting news for a.k.a. Jessica Jones, Marvel's second upcoming Netflix series.
Yay.
We now know the series' main villain will be the Purple Man, and he will be played by The Doctor.
Yes.
Which The Doctor?
Specifically, the 10th The Doctor, David Tennant.
Oh, Tennant. Yeah.
I like Tennant.
He's okay. Wait, is he going to be doing an American accent? Because it's kind of horrible.
Well, I mean, the Purple Man is, like, communist.
He's from Croatia.
I guess a Scottish accent will work for that.
The Purple Man is also...
not like Croatia, you know?
Well, wait, is it Croatia or Yugoslavia?
I mean, it was Yugoslavia at the time, but the part where he's from is now Croatia.
But is David Tennant sleazy enough to be the Purple Man?
Yes.
He can probably do sleazy.
Yeah.
Because the Purple Man is the Marvel Universe's most rapey villain.
Yes.
So...
Well, I don't know. It's either him or the Mandrill.
Mandrill kind of...
Oh, true. Although,
Mandrill's kind of more explicit about it.
I mean, Mandrill seems sleazier because he's like a gross ape man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the Purple Man tried to use his powers on his own daughter at one point, which is just...
Well, didn't the Purple Man get like...
Sticky.
Didn't he get his just desserts by a lot of his kids recently?
That was in Daredevil. I haven't been reading Daredevil.
No.
But there was a bit with purple kids.
Yeah.
I think
they might have killed... They either killed him or got rid of him somehow.
I will also note here that they will probably call him Kilgrave, which is a way cooler name than Purple Man.
Well, yeah. I can't really argue against that.
I just don't think he's purple.
The thing about the Purple Man, right, is you think, oh, okay, so he's an old Daredevil villain. That's where he comes from. And his power is that he's purple so he can control people's minds. And so when you're reading the first Purple Man story, you think, oh, okay, I see what's going to happen here. Because Daredevil's blind, he can't see that Purple Man is purple, so the purple powers won't work on Daredevil. But they do.
Wow.
What?
he has pheromones, so those would affect Daredevil more.
Yeah.
Maybe, because he'd smell
Yeah, you can super smell them. I've really got to do what that guy says.
Yeah. Absolutely got to do that.
Like, he asks him to bring him a coffee. He's bringing him, like, one of those Starbucks trays with at least, like, four of them. He's going above and beyond in his mind control.
Yeah.
And the other bit of casting news is that
Rachel... about live-action Purple Man.
Yes, we are. What a world we live in.
Strange purple world.
Strange purple world we live in.
But
a live-action Purple Man played by a former Doctor Who.
That is correct.
I can't believe we live in this world.
Well, Andrew, you're going to like this next bit of news even more for a couple of reasons. First off, the series will include a live-action Patsy Walker.
Yes!
Mm-hmm.
And secondly,
she's going to be played by your countryman, Rachel Taylor.
Okay. Why do I like her?
She's from Australia, proving that your country's leading export is apparently blondes.
She was in the first Transformers.
Yeah.
The Australian woman who they could have cut out entirely in the movie wouldn't have changed at all.
Yeah.
She kind of had a plot.
Eh.
Yeah, she found...
Ate the whole plate.
I kind of laughed at that scene. Anthony Edwards is a good comic actor.
Yes, Anthony Edwards was good. She didn't need to be there. Could have been Anthony Edwards the whole time.
I mean, I thought she was fine in that movie.
Yeah.
Well, she wasn't given a lot.
No.
No. And she was unfortunately overshadowed at her brief appearance at BotCon 2007, in which she was announced immediately before, I think this was before the crowd had seen, this was right before a screening of the movie, and the crowd hadn't seen it yet.
Yeah.
So they introduced her, and, you know, nobody really knew who she was in the movie. And then they introduced Tyrese Gibson, who everybody knew from the trailer, and immediately started yelling, "Bring it!"
Yeah, well, because
he's great.
Tyrese Gibson is great. But yeah, Patsy Walker in a live-action television show.
It's pretty exciting.
Oh, man, I hope she starts out as a glamour model at some point. Like, there better be some reference to the fact that she was once a romance comics character.
Yes!
I think she's going to be a TV host and...
That's perfect.
Yeah, a talk show host who goes by the celebrity name Patsy Walker.
Aw, yes.
Very nice.
I'm pretty excited.
I wonder, in the original Alias series, there's a whole bit where Jessica is friends with veteran superheroine Carol Danvers. But presumably Carol Danvers isn't going to be in this because she's going to have her own movie coming up.
Yeah.
Where they'll possibly, an origin and everything. But I wonder if maybe, Patsy Walker will have, previously been Hellcat in this.
Ooh.
Ooh, that'd be nice.
I don't know. But, that's great news, man. Love Patsy. I do. She's awesome.
She is delightful.
It's pretty exciting.
And in other Marvel movie news, we've now seen a teaser, myself, only moments earlier, for the new Fantastic Four movie. It's certainly a movie that is going to come out.
It's like a teaser for a trailer?
Probably about the Fantastic Four.
There's definitely a guy made out of rocks in it. There's a guy who's on fire. I didn't see any stretching.
No stretching. There might have been invisibility we just didn't see.
Well, yeah.
Well, there was some kind of force field thing.
There was?
Yeah, I think so. Stretching is really hard to do in live action. I mean, obviously they didn't do it in the Roger Corman movie, but even in those, 2000s
They did it in the Roger Corman movie. There are stretching effects in the Roger Corman.
You can't see it, but I'm doing air quotes around effects.
They were special effects.
Yes, by which I mean the final shot of the movie is them waving an oversized arm out the top of a car that's just married on the back of it.
But I mean, even in those like movies that are like 10 years old at this point, those stretching effects are bad.
Yeah.
It's
and that's a movie with a lot of money behind it.
frustrating thing is that the stretching effects can look fantastic on screen.
I'm sure they can. I just haven't seen them done.
Yes, you have. The Incredibles.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, okay, live action stretching effect. Obviously, in
yeah.
Well, they're going to be using CG anyway.
That's look like person.
There was
It's going to be photorealistic CG versus cartoon stylized CG.
Yes.
Yeah. Because I was going to bring up the mask.
I haven't seen that movie in about 20 years, but I remember it looking nice at the time.
Yeah, plus it had Cher in it.
Fantastic Four is not going to have Cher. It's going to have a rock dude who doesn't seem to be wearing pants.
Yeah, I was going to ask about his pants, because he doesn't seem to be wearing pants.
Maybe he's wearing a thong and we just couldn't see? There's only like one good shot of him in his ass.
Why would you put the thing in a thong, apart from the euphonious sound of that? The thing
fell. Well, this is like maybe the cloth gets all his rocks.
Guys, gather around the campfire. We're having a thing song.
Are we talking about his rocks now?
His rocks, indeed. His
rocks are off.
His stones.
So, as the resident Fantastic Four nut, what I observed about that trailer was that pretty much all of it, every aspect of it, was lifted from Ultimate Fantastic Four. There's basically not a sign of the 616 universe in what I saw in that trailer. And that kind of frustrates me. I kind of don't like the Ultimate comics. So
maybe they couldn't afford an essential.
Oh, gosh. Well, but, I mean, that's what they did with the previous series, is they used a lot of stuff from the Ultimate series, but they did roll in a bunch of random stuff from the Jack Kirby Stan Lee comics. So in the second movie, which is pretty much entirely based on Lee Kirby stuff.
Without actually being it.
Yeah. Down to actually replicating a cameo from the marriage issue of the Fantastic
Annual Number 3, I think.
Yeah.
Where Stan Lee and Jack Kirby get kicked out of the wedding. In this case, it's just Stan Lee getting kicked out of the wedding, alas.
Aww.
Which, as much as I would have loved to see a Uncanny Valley CGI Jack Kirby, I'm glad they didn't go that way with
it.
Yeah,
that would have been weird. They wouldn't have been able to do that at the time. Yeah. Now maybe they could do that.
It could be like all the Terminator stuff with young Arnold.
Oh, that's so weird looking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy.
I still can't believe there's another Terminator movie coming out.
It looks like it's going to be good, though.
No.
It looks better. It might be okay.
Listen, fool me
it's
once, shame on you.
With
a Y. Yeah.
I'm not saying
fool
it's
me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me thrice, stop making Terminator movies.
I haven't seen any in a while. I skipped the last one.
Third one has some moments. Fourth one doesn't really have some moments, except I'm amused by the super Transformer-y Terminators.
I liked Salvation, but I like dark stuff.
It makes me sad
when the non-human inevitably has to give up their life for the human.
You must lower me into the steel. I cannot self-terminate. I know that why you cry.
The problem with this conversation about Terminator is it has nothing to do with what the hell we're talking about. So
no, it's that we're more interested.
Yes, it does. It has to do with special effects. Ethics and game journalism.
No,
Alex Ross got his comics debut in Terminator Comics. I believe published by Now.
Wait, who did?
Wow.
Alex Ross. You know, the Marvel.
Oh, right.
The painter guy who photographs people.
Yes.
What David was about to say, but he didn't get to finish, and I think he hit the nail on the head, was that it showed how little the Fantastic Four trailer held our interest.
Yeah, we're more excited for Terminator than Fantastic Four. Only slightly, yeah, but...
And it's Terminator Genesis with a Y, so...
Yeah. So
we're more excited for a 90s comic, basically.
But it's going to be fan four stick, though.
Oh, yeah. The logo doesn't look like it either.
All right.
I'm still sad that we didn't get Transformers.
I'm still bummed about that.
Yeah. I don't know when I'm ever going to get over that, because it needed to be Transformers.
All right, and moving on to our next item. Your foster parents are dead.
What?
I'm still stuck on Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator 2 friends.
Okay.
Knives and stabbing weapons.
Your Arnie is terrible. Arnie is as bad as David's Ultimate Warrior.
Like a third-hand Arnie front voice. Like taken from the SNL version. Or maybe the Conan version. Anyway, what's the next news item?
All right, we have a little publishing news. Marvel's not announcing a lot of new comics in that they are potentially destroying their universe or something. Who knows? But they have announced a third ongoing series about the Inhumans.
What? Why? There's still two? I kind of saw
The second one hasn't started coming out yet. I can't remember what the third one is called.
Marvel, why?
Marvel, stop.
Well, there's Inhuman. There was Inhumanity, or did Inhumanity finish?
No, Inhumanity was just like a sort of a tagline.
Okay, I don't know.
The second one is, what is it? It's got, blurg. It's Charles Soule writing it, who also writes Inhuman, and Steve McNiven is drawing it.
He writes a lot.
Every now and then they'll do an Inhuman series. When I was collecting my Fantastic Four series, I ran into a problem because there was a listing I found for appearances by the Fantastic Four in issues 2 and 3 of an Inhumans limited series, but there were 3 different limited series and I couldn't work out which one was the one. So I had to buy issue 2 and 3 of all of these different limited series, and the Fantastic Four wasn't in any of them. And
their fault.
So I have 3 different Inhumans limited series without any Fantastic Four appearances. It's just random issues from these limited series, and they are all terrible. Just terrible. I'm just, no. Stop it. I want to love the Inhumans. They're basically Jack Kirby trialing his fourth world concepts. Mm-hmm. You know, like sort of starting to get there with them.
They're also like a very prototype version of the late X-Men concept. Well, the concept that the X-Men popularized, I guess, you know, it's a world of people who hate and fear us, so we're going to go live in a city in Tibet, and then a city on the moon, and et cetera, et cetera.
Currently, it's a city in the Hudson River.
That seems like a step down.
Yeah, they're trading down.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of a weak hiding place. I think people will notice.
It's not great.
Think of all the good restaurants they're close to now, though. Where are you going to go for takeout on the blue area of the moon? At most, maybe you can go and borrow a cup of sugar from Uatu.
I was going to say, maybe the Watcher would have opened a restaurant. And you go to the restaurant and you try to get served, and he says, "I cannot serve you because I have made a vow never to interfere."
Maybe he's running a Weight Washers.
Of course, you know that it is Uatu, so as soon as you go in, he will say that, but then, like, 5 minutes later, he'll tell you what today's specials are.
Yeah.
Every few weeks you go in, and if you're really hungry, he'll be like, "I cannot stand by."
Try the bisque. Oh, and also, Ego the Living Planet is coming, but have you tried this bisque?
Oh my gosh. Is there any character in the Marvel Universe that is funnier than Uatu the Watcher? He's so funny.
MODOK, maybe?
Maybe MODOK, maybe. Oh.
I mean, it doesn't help that Uatu also looks like a giant baby in a tote.
No, he just looks like a super deformed Professor X in a toga.
He's the only
he's a bobblehead of Professor X.
Yeah, he's the only Marvel character where you wouldn't actually have to change his design to create a bobblehead of him.
He can just look like himself.
Just like, I don't know, trying to make the Inhumans happen again, possibly a third again. I don't know, you have the Eternals? I mean, at least you've got some Jack Kirby design. Well, they're both Jack Kirby designs, but the Eternals are more interesting than the Inhumans.
I'm gonna quibble with you on that one. I mean, the Inhumans at least have Lockjaw.
Yeah. The Eternals might have some better designs, but don't really care.
So the Eternals are just super 70s.
Yeah.
Basically what you've got is a race of hidden superhumans who were created by tampering from a super powerful alien race who fight primitives who were also created by the same kind of tampering, and they live in a hidden city. I think maybe by the time Jack Kirby came to the Eternals, he was repeating himself just a little bit.
He was repeating himself, and also he was watching a lot of In Search Of at the time.
The Eternals were actually never intended by Kirby to be part of the Marvel Universe. So
now there are, and they're redundant.
They're absolutely redundant. If you have the Inhumans, you don't actually need the Eternals.
Well, look, I'm not saying the Eternals are good. I'm just saying the Inhumans are that boring.
On the other hand, Gilgamesh has been an Avenger, so there's that.
Listen, as far as them becoming part of the Marvel Universe, I think the Marvel Universe is, if you'll allow me to engage in a little foreshadowing for our appendectomy, the Marvel Universe is like Unicron. That which does not become a part of the One shall become void.
Yeah, plus if you don't roll the Eternals into the Marvel Universe, you don't get the Celestials, and they are free.
Yeah, you need
the Celestials. Are I really was geeking out when we saw a Celestial ever so briefly in Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, we saw a head, but we also saw one.
Yes.
Was that Oneg the Prober? I can't remember which one, but it was like a recognizable Jack Kirby Eternal.
It sure as hell was.
That was the one who has like six eyes.
And, that was lovely. Guardians was so good.
Yeah, see, I mean, at least Eternals brings that to the table.
Yeah. And then the Inhumans brings an awesome dog, and I mean, I think part of why Marvel's doing this.
I guess that's fair, yeah.
He's a pretty great dog.
Mm.
There's an Inhumans movie coming out.
That's what I was about to ask. Is all these Inhumans comics a lead up to the fact that there's an Inhumans movie coming out?
I mean,
at least trying to get people excited for it.
Trying to remind people that the Inhumans exist, other than Lockjaw and Medusa.
Although, I mean, there is a Captain Marvel movie coming up, and she has one series, although I guess she's also in Guardians and Avengers. And there's a Black Panther movie coming out, and he doesn't even have one series going on right now.
No, I'm going to have to wait for him.
Well, the thing with the Inhumans is they're not actually designed as standalone characters. You basically have a set of characters that are clearly designed as antagonists and spice to make the Marvel Universe bigger for the Fantastic Four to play in.
And they're guest stars.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when you read those old comics where the Human Torch is going crazy because his girlfriend is trapped in the negative zone. Not the negative zone, a different negative zone, because... Yeah, never mind.
Another negative.
But
Yeah, there's a negative zone around Attilan at one point. But when you read those old issues, it works really well. And Black Bolt works incredibly well as a character who isn't a main character. Like, the moment you take Black Bolt and you make him a main character...
You can't make him a main character.
You're
he doesn't
stuck
say
with a
shit.
Main character who can't talk. Yeah.
If you stick him in a video game, you could do that. But in a movie, unless you have an internal monologue, which would kind of defeat the purpose of...
Yeah, but if he's this majestic guy who your hero has to go up to and negotiate with, even though he doesn't talk, that's really freaking cool.
Yeah, he's a big ominous king who don't talk.
Yeah, yeah. But if you try and make him the main character, it's kind of broken.
Yeah. He's not really main character material.
You could make Medusa the main character.
Yeah, plus he has this sexy, hairy girlfriend that he loves.
I still don't know what Crystal's deal is.
Some people she like
has
a nice
element powers.
She's an elemental.
She's there to date Johnny Storm or whoever comes around.
Or Quicksilver.
Quicksilver, yeah.
Yep. Or a random human.
Or Ronan the Accuser.
Well, that ain't going to happen now.
That's probably not happening in the movies.
Unless Ronan is a family name or something.
No, I'm Ronan's cousin, Ronan. You got to put more emphasis on the final syllable. It's Ronan.
I know. Three N's.
I'm an actuary. Not big
yes,
on
he's
hitting
from,
people with hammers.
He's from the Don't. South Halla Accusers.
Don't date him. He's Ronan the Abuser. You don't want to go near him.
It's Ronan the Diffuser. He works on the bomb squad.
I call myself Ronan the Accuser, but it's not a title. I just accuse people of things all the time. Not professionally. It's more of a hobby. Somebody steals my lunch from the fridge at work.
Except actually, I just misplaced it, but I'm still gonna accuse somebody.
I'm already halfway through some accusations.
I just asked him for a cup of sugar, and he said no. Well, he's Ronan the Refuser. What do you expect?
If you're looking for somebody to date your Crystal, you probably want my cousin Ronan the Seducer.
Oh, that was too good. Oh my god. All the funny parts of Marvel today. oh my god.
Oh, Inhumans, yeah.
Inhumans, yes. And a part of it is also that the current thing with the Inhumans where Black Bolt has released the Terrigen gas throughout the world, awakening latent in humans. It's very X-Men, and Marvel can't make X-Men movies.
Yeah,
but they can
so
make Inhumans
lots of
movies.
Replacement humans.
Yeah, I mean.
Maybe that's what it comes down to, is that they.
And, you know, if that gets us a movie with the new Ms. Marvel, I'm all for it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that'd be nice. I just want Lockjaw in three movies.
Yes.
Now, do you do, like, CG for Lockjaw, or is he like a giant weird puppet?
I'd love if they actually have an on-set puppet that drools, but I figure he's mostly going to be CG.
And maybe they'll have like an actual dog and do mocap.
Well, the thing with Lockjaw in the old art, I don't know about modern stuff, is he doesn't run anywhere. He just is this big lump of a dog that
sits
there.
Occasionally he'll jump on people, but yeah, most of the time he's just standing there drooling and then...
And that's one of the things that's so adorable about him is that because he can teleport, all he does is just stand there.
Oh, he's so fat.
Oh, there's something I want.
Oh, he's
I
a big want fat a game dog.
Of, I want a game of fetch with Lockjaw in a movie. Throw the frisbee, pop. Yeah, he pops over, catches it, pops back.
So good. So good.
And anyway, I think that is about all the news. Much like the Beyonder, we have moved beyond the news. And now somebody will have to teach me how to get to the next segment, which is what we read this past week. Fortnite, whatever. So who wants to go first? It's me again, isn't it? All right.
Sure.
Go, go, go.
All right. This week, I read and greatly enjoyed Spider-Man and the X-Men number 2, written by Daily Show head writer and noted podcaster Elliot Kalin, and drawn by Marco Faya. It's,
look,
again,
did
it's
involve
taking,
Arcade.
It did not involve Arcade, but it did involve the never-before-seen team-up of Stegron and Sauron.
Which is way better than Arcade.
Well, look, if you're going to have Spider-Man and the X-Men, Arcade having revenge has to be involved somehow.
Eventually, maybe, but this is a team-up that should have happened a long time ago. You have a Pterodon man and a Stegosaur man who've never officially met in the Marvel Universe before. That's... why? They're perfect.
Oh, they turn people into dinosaurs, and they get into a fight over who gets to date a shark who is probably underage.
She's definitely
underage. That's not appropriate.
Oh, is that the one where the Spider-Man and Sauron talking about curing cancer is from?
Yes.
Yes, that's where
it's from. Because
Sauron has devised a way to transform people into dinosaurs. And Spider-Man's all, well, wait, if you could do that, can't you, like, cure cancer? And Spider-Man's, well, I don't want to cure cancer. I want to turn people into dinosaurs.
You know?
Really?
Really? What? Okay. That line in a recent comic?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that makes me hate this issue of Fantastic Four even more.
Because nobody's getting turned into dinosaurs?
No, because Reed Richards says to the villain, with all your genius, you could have done something good for the world. You could have cured cancer. And the villain's like, I had the cure for cancer, but then I destroyed it because I didn't think people deserved it.
Stupid. At least these guys are crazy and are doing something else.
Also,
we made dinosaurs anyway. No. We just want to make dinosaurs because they are dinosaurs.
They don't want to cure cancer.
And they want to flirt with a possibly 16-year-old girl who looks like a shark.
What is the shark girl thing? I am unaware of this.
She's one of the titular X-Men, Shark Girl. She's a girl who can turn into a shark.
Yeah, she's kind of a were-shark.
She's Viralina.
Name is Iara. She showed up when the Phoenix... Avengers versus X-Men when
finally there were
new mutants.
Yeah.
Man, that was a better reference than where I was going to go, Andrew, because my first thought was Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
Well, no. it was never either Viralina or Tiger Sharks, man. So like,
Issue ends with them having solved the whole dinosaur problem, only to be immediately kidnapped by the chameleon who's working for Mojo.
Dun, dun, dun.
So I kind of like the ongoing theme here of Spider-Man and X-Men villains teaming up.
Yeah. If you're going to do a team-up, that's the best way to do it.
And, you know, they're kind of thematically, I mean, not so much Mojo and the chameleon. I mean, the chameleon is a guy who generally works for various scumbags.
And Mojo, yeah. Definitely.
I've got my fingers crossed for Mr. Sinister and the Jackal.
Ooh, that would be weird. That'll make sense, though.
I know, I could kind of see Mysterio teaming up with Mojo, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Although Mysterio is currently on the doomed Ultimate Earth. So they'll have to bust him out of stir at some point.
Well, there's enough Mysterios wandering around. They got.
But anyway, the art is nice. The writing is very clever and amusing and light.
It's very wordy though, but
and it's wordy, but like in kind of an old school kind of comics way.
Yeah, to be perfectly like I as the issue went on, I started reading Sauron in like the Monarch voice.
He does have like a kind of monarchy.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, he's also kind of, pointed and elongated like the Monarch.
Yes, he's long, skinny, and he just keeps talking in villain voice all the time.
He's one of those guys who yells all the time.
Yeah.
I don't want to cure cancer, Venture. I want to turn people into dinosaurs. I can't do a Monarch.
It's hard. And they turn Glob Herman into the most adorable or Triceratops.
Glob Herman into a Glob Triceratops.
Yeah, because Glob Herman is a skeleton inside a protoplasm body, so you see his skeleton. And when they turn him into a Triceratops, he's a Triceratops skeleton inside the pink blob.
And he's also like the size of a pony.
Yeah, he's tiny.
So he is adorable.
Well, he's still a teenager.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's I would say it's probably like an all-ages book even. You know, there's nothing objectionable in it.
Well, other than implied flirting between species.
Yeah, know. I mean, it's, you know, flirting, though.
No.
Nobody's followed this to the ultimate conclusion of horrifying statutory dino rape.
Ew.
Maybe he's carrying around those little cards like in Transformers.
Wait, wasn't there a sci-fi original movie called Dino Shark, or am I confusing that with Transformers?
I'm almost certain there was. I think it's just an ancient shark, though, and not an actual half-dinosaur, half-shark. Not that they haven't gone to that well before, like the noted classic Sharktopus.
Okay, we got some wind coming in.
I believe that starred Eric Roberts. Oscar nominee Eric Roberts.
Why?
Brother who Julia Roberts probably only calls at Christmas, Eric Roberts.
It was just an annoyingly good issue. It was too good.
Come on, Eric Roberts, you were in The Dark Knight.
You're still on that.
Still worked up over him.
The man but was Eric... a talking cat.
Eric Roberts was also in the Doctor Who movie.
You're right, he was.
The Kelly movie, he played the master.
Perhaps the less said about that, the better.
They revealed the Doctor was half-human.
And they revealed that Eric Roberts probably needed the paycheck.
Yeah.
Just walking around the end of that movie like the T-1000. Eric Roberts. Anyway, who else read something?
I read something this week.
Oh, good.
But I didn't like it.
Oh, so you read Fantastic Four again?
Yeah, this happens to me. It was marginally better than the previous issues.
Well, that's good.
So for the last three issues, the villain's been doing his monologuing scene where he explains to the hero what his plans are.
Mm-hmm. As they do.
Let me repeat three that. Issues? For the last three issues, he's been doing his monologuing scene.
Has anything else happening?
This fourth issue is the final issue of the monologuing scene, apparently. And he's finally executing his plan. And at the end, Reed Richards yells, "I'm going to stop you!" And he goes, "I'm not a cartoon villain. You can't stop me. I already started my plan 20 seconds ago.
Ah, ha, ha." Oh, come
Wait,
that's
on. That's Kilgore from Watchmen.
Also, it's only 20 seconds. He's been monologuing for three whole issues?
Three whole issues.
He should have started like 3 hours ago.
Man. Yeah.
That makes me angry.
I'm not a Republic serial villain, John. I did it 45 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Nothing makes me angry like flagrantly non-referencing things so much better than they are.
Well, it's like, okay, I get it. That's a great moment. But it's also a moment that is ridiculously famous among comic fans. Just
possibly one of the most famous lines in any comic book ever.
It is. You can't just steal that moment. And there's a terrible bit where there's a two-page scene, which was a scene that already played out two issues before in literally exactly the same way of the wizard torturing Franklin Richards while his clone son Bentley looks on. And then finally they wrapped that one up and Bentley revealed himself to be a hero, which was like, oh, at last he gets to do something awesome. So like he turned the Vision, not 616 Vision, the Vision from Heroes Reborn, into chocolate with a chocolate gun. And I'm just like, okay, this is what I wanted. Why hasn't this entire frickin'
series been this.
Yeah, goofy like that. And also, that isn't that kind of like almost a reference to Dragon Ball Z?
Oh, I don't know. But if it is, it's fantastic. Because,
wait, does somebody get sent to the home for infinite losers?
No, but that's where I wanted to be, like in this one moment. And there were a couple of other little moments like that throughout the issue that played out really well. So it was better than previously. I didn't necessarily want to rage quit as often.
But after three issues of monologuing and crappy who makes no sense,
it's just too much. Like, it's just too much.
Andrew, I think you're burying the lead here. You got to tell us about the long-awaited character return that occurs in this issue.
Oh yeah, Sleepwalker comes back. So the issue has another significant thing, is they've started renumbering it again from 642.
Well, of course, the closer you get to a big number, you have to do that. Deadpool's doing that.
Pain in the butt. So yes, the issue ends with the classic sequence where they go and they find, what's the name of Sleepwalker's? Rick Sheridan. Yeah. So they go and they find Rick Sheridan to help get into Franklin Richards' dreams and correct things that are going wrong. Rick Sheridan says, you don't want me, you want the entity inside me, you want, and then it's a splash page, and it's the final splash page of the issue. And he says, the Sleepwalker! In the Sleepwalker title. And there's like an image of the Sleepwalker above it. And it's just like, this is what I want! Yes! This is what I want from Fantastic Four comic, is this awesome stuff like this. I want people talking in their title fonts. I want people proclaiming their own names and things like that. I might like this villain better if he had his own title graphic.
Does he even have like a villain name?
Oh, he does. I believe it's the Quiet Man.
What? That just sounds like a boring spy movie.
It sounds like it's also not even accurate.
If he spent the last three issues talking.
Yeah, but he's been talking like this.
Oh. Oh, he's...
No, also, does that mean his secret identity is John Wayne?
No, this issue was the issue where he recapped everything that happened in the comic run that he did, that he was behind. But we already knew he was behind it all, so you didn't need to recap it. So it just was a reminder of how boring all those issues had been. And then it turns out that Psycho Man is working for him, and I was like, okay, Psycho Man is working for him? Like, okay.
Like, how's that, like for money? Does the Psycho Man need money? Can you spend money in the negative zone? Or microverse?
The microverse. Yeah. Like, what does he give him? Does he give him the atoms that make up a coin or something? Like,
he needs some scratch to make repairs on his, thing with, like, hate, fear, and doubt on it. Probably has a name.
He's paying him in microtransactions.
I think at this point we need to move on to the next comic. Yeah. Okay.
So, do we want to talk Dick Tracy or robots?
We just skipped David entirely.
Yeah,
oh, right. I forgot you. Or Guardians of the Galaxy.
I'll do it quick. Guardians of the Galaxy, love-hate relationship with this book. It's because I love Guardians of the Galaxy. Love the movie. Did not love most of Bendis's run so far. This is issue 23. He's had maybe three good issues counting this one.
Are we getting a review in Twitter sentences here?
Yeah, they're kind of short.
What's going on with your grammar?
It's falling apart. I don't know. Words.
It's metaphorical. It's falling apart in the face of his disappointment.
Yeah. Also, there isn't a lot of there isn't a lot of dialogue for the first half of this issue.
And then it's like all dialogue.
Flash Thompson symbiote took over Drax after beating up everybody else and is flying their little Guardians spaceship to the symbiote planet, which is nothing but symbiotes, and it looks horrific and sort of H.R. Geiger with flowers, which is weird. And
it's really nice art, actually.
It is really nice art. He does expressions, too, really good, like Gamora's face. What's the artist's name?
Valerio Schiti, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, really good faces.
Yeah.
So they arrive there. Everyone's panicking. The Venom symbiote runs outside to go visit all the other symbiotes. And then everybody in the ship's kind of cranky, especially Drax, because he wants to kill Flash Thompson for bringing the symbiote there, which thereby brought them to this planet, and they're kind of stuck there right now. But the Flash wants to go out and talk to the symbiote, because there's lots of symbiotes floating around the ship, and Drax says no, everybody else is bickering. Quill says, okay, sure, why not? And then he goes out, and then they all sort of merge with the symbiotes, and there's this long conversation where the symbiotes explain exactly what they really are, and we're not all bad. We're actually pretty nice. Only the crazy ones who have left our planet to bond with imperfect people who aren't moral and aren't physically strong enough to handle a symbiote like Peter Parker. But Flash Thompson is perfect. It works. Even though he doesn't have legs, he's the perfect individual to bond with a symbiote. And they're all happy about that. And they congratulate him, and they upgrade his symbiote, basically.
So now he looks very kind of Halo-y?
Kind of video game-y. Like, he's big. He's more like the bigger, bulkier old Venom, but his head is sort of like a robotic sort of battle helmet kind of thing.
It's a good look. I like it.
Yeah. And admittedly, kind of the best part of this issue was on one of the pages where the symbiote starts narrating everything about what symbiotes are and saying, oh, what do they call themselves? The
Kleintar.
Kleintar or something. They have a name. Yeah. They're symbiotes.
Well, they have a name. I mean, they're not going to call themselves symbiotes. They're an alien. An alien name.
Yes, but it's just call us the symbiotes. We are symbiotes. Why do we need a word for ourselves? We are people.
Anyway, it's fine.
It's fine. But on the first long page where the symbiote is narrating, it has a line: "With the right host, we have the ability to create the ultimate noble warrior." So after that, ultimate warrior part, I started reading everything in the Ultimate Warrior voice, and the issue became a fun, goofy ride for the talky bits. It was a good issue. Bendis is getting better at writing comic books, although he's been writing comic books for decades. I just haven't been reading them until now.
Yeah, that's kind of...
Yeah.
Well,
I didn't want to read any of the Ultimate Universe stuff. I don't really... Until recently, I haven't cared about Peter Parker, and then it's Miles Morales. It's like, it's in a universe, I don't care. Give me 616, give me good stuff.
Well, I did read his X-Men stuff for a while.
I liked some of the ideas, but it was like he was trying to write Buffy and failing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this, he's finally nailed the Guardians of the Galaxy by basically writing the movie Guardians of the Galaxy, because he finally saw the movie. It's like, he's hewed the dialogue like, he's made Drax a little bit rougher, not quite as literal as movie Drax, but more in the tough attitude. And he's finally gotten their voices down right, and is actually doing interesting things like having them visit symbiotes. He's getting better. He's learning to become a comic book writer in my life.
After, like, many years of being one professional.
Well done, Mr. Bendis. You're... Yeah. You're improving quite well. One of these days, you'll be such a good writer.
I guess he just doesn't write in a style I normally really like.
I mean, he does have a very distinct style.
Yeah, the problem, or at least, I guess I kind of noticed it in this until recently, and in the X-Men stuff, a lot of the characters tend to talk with the same kind of voice.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like they're all at the same sort of jokey level.
Bendis voice.
Yeah.
It's very David Mamet.
Yeah, which it doesn't quite work. Because, like, the Guardians, they're so... Rocket's a little asshole. Drax is a big, not quite dumb guy, but tough guy. And then there's Groot. Groot, you can't screw up.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only plus.
Not really.
He's just got the cadence all wrong.
Anyway, that's
emphasizing
my,
the wrong words, syllables.
That's my short review, unless you want me to talk about Godzilla fighting Anomalocaruses.
He put in an apostrophe! Who says I'm Groot?
See, you can ruin it. You can ruin Groot.
Apostrophe was a comma.
Well, I was going to say, Rob, with the symbiote stuff that was in this comic, how's it work with like your grand view of the symbiotes?
It pretty much does, actually. There's nothing in here that really conflicts, given the very limited amount of symbiotes we've seen. And we did see a more warlike symbiotes in the Planet of the Symbiotes storyline that ran through the Spider books in 95.
Yeah.
But they do mention here that they have, you know, various offshoots that are, you know, more warlike and colonial.
Yeah, this is apparently their actual home world.
Yeah, and we despite that being called Planet of the Symbiotes, we didn't actually see the actual Planet of the Symbiotes.
Oh, I seem to remember their origin being that they are dispensed from intergalactic juice dispensers, you know, like just go up to the intergalactic soda machine, you press the buttons and out dispenses a symbiote. Isn't that how it happened?
Well, he was cast out from his people and put in that machine, and that somehow ended up as part of Battle World.
but who puts a symbiote as the prize in a vending machine? I just don't get it.
Jim Shooter.
Trying to get the troll doll, but I believe Matt may be referring to my other grand unifying theory of symbiosis, which is that symbiotes feed off Catholicism.
What?
All right, hear me out here. Flash Thompson.
Yeah.
Super Irish name, father's a cop, Catholic.
Uh-huh.
Probably.
The first host of Toxin, Patrick Mulligan, super Irish name, Catholic.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Cletus Cassidy, probably Catholic.
What? There's so many weird things with Cletus Cassidy. His name... Isn't his, like, dialogue kind of, like, southern sounding in a way?
Yes, but
he's
from
Brooklyn.
There are a lot of
Irish people.
Yeah, he came from Brooklyn. What the hell? It's weird.
He's just being a jerk.
Yeah.
Further symbiote hosts include Donna Diego, probably Hispanic, and thus probably Catholic.
But the
only outlier here, and also Mac Gargan, probably Catholic.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so Peter Parker is the outlier, the first.
Right.
And he didn't really work out, ultimately.
Yeah,
and Eddie Brock was, in fact, praying in a Catholic church when he first acquired the symbiote.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, because symbiotes are drawn to churches, obviously.
Maybe they must really like those little cookies and the grape juice.
I was about to say, maybe it's the communion wine. Maybe they're attracted to alcohol.
Of course, the other possibility is that they feed on guilt.
Then why would it leave Peter Parker?
That's like something
Peter Parker
I would
wanted to get rid of it.
And how come Daredevil never had it? Or has he had the symbiote?
Well, they also like seeing.
Well, what about that time it bonded to the Silver Surfer and we got Cosmic Carnage?
I'm going to take a Patrick Mulligan on that one.
I'm pretty sure the Surfer is filled with guilt.
Oh, sure. Tons
of
guilt.
Yeah.
No, he's not. He's not filled with guilt. He's filled with existential angst.
Okay.
You gotta remember...
those are my favorite words.
You gotta remember that the Silver Surfer isn't necessarily guilty about the things he's done, as opposed to... He looks at the universe and he sees that it's flawed and he wishes it wasn't flawed.
Oh.
Yeah. Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Sorry.
Well, there was some stuff with the symbiote backstory, I think, in that Spider-Man Unlimited cartoon, because whenever like I turned into it when there was nothing else on, they were talking about the Synoptic. Like, Venom and Carnage were main characters, but I don't think anyone has actually seen all of Spider-Man Unlimited, so I don't know what the whole story with that was.
Even I haven't seen all of it.
Wait, which one was Unlimited?
That's the one where he's on Counter-Earth with the animal
yeah,
people.
Yeah, I saw like three episodes and stopped.
Exactly. Nobody has seen the entire thing. People who worked on that series probably haven't seen the whole thing.
There was some Animal Man and lots of bullcrap.
Yeah.
And I think Spider-Man kept getting hit on by a rat woman.
Someone had a strange fetish.
Yeah. It was probably Marvel's attempt to do a Batman Beyond, but for whatever reason, they didn't just do Spider-Man 2099. And
it's also a kind of a flawed premise because Batman Beyond was DC doing Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, they did it pretty good.
Oh, sure.
Well, I wasn't saying Batman Beyond's premise was flawed. I was saying Spider-Man Unlimited's premise.
Of course, yeah. Batman did it better.
Yes, I don't know if Terry McGinnis was a better Spider-Man, but whatever.
He was a good host for the symbiote. Oh, wait, his outfit just looked like a symbiote.
All right, so shall we move on to robots or Dick Tracy's?
I can do robots.
Okay, robots it is.
So, new More Than Meets the Eye out this week.
We'll be coming out when this drops anyway.
Yes.
Yes.
We're early.
So I feel like we're sort of continuing on with, like, plot motion wise, not a lot of, you know, fairly slow movement, but so much stuffed into all the moments.
Yeah, there's a kind of a big plot reveal at the end, which we will not reveal.
So it's but it's definitely those character moments that have always carried the book, and that's what makes it what it is. So we've got the handful of people from the Lost Light back in time, trying to find their erstwhile comrade Brainstorm, who has run off into the time stream, and they are under the impression that he is going to try to assassinate Orion Pax, who becomes Optimus Prime because they found out that he is a Decepticon double agent. I will note that I'm still waiting for the other shoe to drop even on the Decepticon double agent thing. And I think this is just because James Roberts yanks us around so much that I'm like kind of waiting to see if it's going to turn out that no, that was like something that he was playing for some reason or another.
We rather conspicuously haven't seen anything from Brainstorm's point of view yet.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Not really.
So we don't actually know his motives from his point of view, which means it's still all up in the air, and we are still sort of waiting for the shoe to drop. And there are suggestions in this issue that the things that people thought were the motives aren't really the motives.
Yeah. I mean, since this is going up around the time the issue hits, do we want to go ahead and mention the spoilers?
I would not mention spoilers.
No, because it's a last page thing. We can avoid.
Yeah, last page.
We'll leave out the last page. We'll leave out the last page thing. But you have Cyclonus and Tailgate, who are both sort of time displaced in their own ways. They were both, you know, taken out of play from Cybertron a little before this was happening. Mm-hmm. So you have both of them seeing Cybertron in its former glory and dealing with that.
Remember in the good old days that they actually kind of missed.
You have Chrome Dome freaking out because he's afraid he's going to run into himself because they're kind of in that area. Though you also wonder if part of it is also that he's afraid he's going to run into his ex-boyfriend. So there's that. Like I said, the character moments are great. Perceptor finally admits that Brainstorm is a genius. And that's one of my theories, is that Brainstorm's ultimate motivation was just to get Perceptor to admit that he was a genius. Everything he's doing was just to get Perceptor to admit that he's a genius. But yeah, you had a lot of good character moments. I was very, very sad that Chrome Dome and Rewind are still kind of dealing with the fallout of everything that happened from the last many the last 36 issues prior to this.
Life and death and rebirth, but not.
Yeah, because at this point, I mean, basically this rewind is not the rewind who all the stuff happened to in the previous series, because there was an accident with the quantum engines and it created a duplicate ship. And so this is that duplicate ship's rewind, whose crew was horribly massacred, and he was the sole survivor. And, you know, I know there were a lot of people back when Rewind came back who were like, oh, everything's just going to go back to normal with them, and oh, that's ooh, dumb. No. No, they are not back to normal. And
you can't
really
have
sad.
Nice things.
You can't have nice things here. And that was just, there's some moments with them that are just really like, oh, why? It's too sad.
Yeah, because Rewind's thinking of if he had a chance going back and saving one of his exes.
Yeah, and Chrome Dome's saying just, but then we wouldn't be us. Is that what you want? I was like, oh, I can't deal. Too many feels, too many Tumblr feels. This is one of those issues that, like, the morning it hits, I'm going to have to be on Tumblr, like, yes, all of you feel my pain. Yeah. It's also very notable in that it ties in directly with previous story, and again, James Roberts does these things where little details that came up earlier will suddenly be relevant. And there are a couple pages that I think are almost, if not just directly lifted from the previous Shadow Play flashback arc.
Yeah. Wait, is the art actually copied?
I think it is. I mean, I think it's exactly the same pages. I'd have to go back and pull my trade down. But
there was a massive feeling of deja vu anyway. It was the same scenes playing.
I've read over Shadow Play a couple of times, and it's definitely like the panel of Nightbeat throwing back his drink and Rung sitting there putting together his little model. And that definitely, that's the exact same layout. So that's, you know, in a lot of comics that would be like, gosh, that's kind of cheap, but in here it super works.
Yeah. Also, that was like, what, 20 issues ago or so?
Yes. Yes. It also helps that was like probably 25 issues.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been 2 years. We can reuse those pages when they're relevant. So yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot more I can say without spoiling. It turns out that his plot was not to kill Orion Pax, but I'm not going to say what his plot is.
Well, trying to go back to kill Orion Pax, that seemed like too easy, simple of a plot anyway.
Yeah, that was like, always...
It wasn't that. He's doing something else. You just... don't know what.
Yeah, that was always what, like, their, you know, the crew's knee-jerk assumption.
They jumped to what they thought was the worst-case scenario.
Yeah, so it was, I mean, because I always expect these things to take random twists, you know, I pretty much assumed that they were wrong about that, and as it turns out, yes, they were. But we get to see some great time travel stuff. There's a lot of great development with Whirl.
Yeah, we see how Whirl was more unstable than we thought he was, and why he should be really unstable.
And we see his pre-Imperata face.
Which is kind of boring. It's like, it's a face, and he's got hands.
What yeah, but still.
Way cooler looking now.
Yeah, but he's also, you know, messed up now.
Really messed up.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of that kind of time travel story stuff with talking about whether we should change things and, you know, should we save these guys who we know are dying.
And yet,
like,
the random thing, yet the random things they do seem to have been inevitable anyway.
Yeah.
Or at least sort of, in that Whirl kind of killed a dude.
Yes. Whirl did kill a dude in the past. Whirl has now gone back in time and killed the dude. So, good job, Whirl. Good job. I mean, I guess, compared to Rodimus in the earlier issue, pulling Trailcutter aside and saying, don't get killed.
That should
That's just nudging. It's like that's put on a bulletproof vest when the Iranians come to kill you or something.
Yeah. So after that, I mean, there's he doesn't have a lot of moral authority to tell World to not kill a dude. Yes. But yeah, overall, like I said, it's continuing that sort of feeling it's had since Dark Cybertron of the events playing out kind of slowly but being packed with all those character moments. So it's definitely a good issue.
Yes.
Even if I'm sad about my gay robots.
Yeah, well, I'll add that Brainstorm is available now from Entertainment Earth or your other fine e-tailers.
Yes, I have that toy. It's pretty great. I played with him a little bit after reading that and then had to put him away because he's being bad right now. He's misbehaving. But yeah, we will find out. I have to say, too, poor Chrome Dome right now, between what's going on with Rewind and the fact that, like, one of his best friends has gone, like, traitor on them. Because that doesn't really come up, and I'm sure it will at some point, because James Roberts does not miss these moments. At some point, it needs to come up that Chrome Dome was basically Brainstorm's only friend. I mean, at one point, it's said in that many words. He's his only friend. So that's got to hit extra hard.
And unlike Brainstorm, he doesn't have a cool new toy.
Yeah, which is really sad because I love Chrome. See, and I've mentioned this before on the show, but the great thing about More Than Meets the Eye is that there's a character for everyone to relate to who's like your character, and Chrome Dome is my character because he's miserable all the time and hates his past. So my heart goes out to him.
Unfortunately, I related to Pipes.
Yeah, that's a sad position to be in because he's dead.
Who I relate to the most? Tailgate, maybe? Or Trailcutter, but well, Trailcutter's dead.
Yeah, at least my character may be being put through the emotional wringer, but at least he's still alive.
Yeah, Trailcutter was really, I mean, both Trailcutter and Pipes were just kind of, you know, they were guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't really have, you know, any strong personality traits.
They were there.
I've got a force field.
Yeah, that was Trailcutter's whole thing, was that he had his one gimmick, and he resented that he had one gimmick. He hated that the only reason anyone cared about him was for his one gimmick.
It was a really good gimmick until it got him killed.
Yeah. Oh. Poor guy. And then, yeah, Pipes got stepped on.
No.
This is the best, saddest Transformers comic.
Yeah, wait. There was the flashback of Cyclonus kicking Tailgate. When did that happen?
I assume that was referencing when he kicked him, like, very, 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 like, issue 2.
Super early on.
I don't think I actually ever got issue 2.
Which was honestly the thing that sort of made their relationship kind of, yeah, to me, but I guess if he apologized for it, then it's okay.
It only took him, like, 36 issues.
He's a stoic kind of guy.
Yeah, you know, don't Hank Pym the poor guy.
Yeah. I'll give him some leeway. I mean, it's not like they were... it's not like they're a thing, but, you know.
But they are.
Also, I like the continued implication that Getaway is, like, always trying to chat up Tailgate, because that came up at one point.
Yeah, and apparently his pick up line is, "You could be a wrecker. Wreckers always die. What the hell kind of line is that?"
And commit war crimes.
I think Getaway is just a perv.
Yeah.
He likes him lowly.
You'll find out what bump actually means.
Yeah.
All
right. I'm sure if I looked around Tumblr for 2 minutes, I could find a Getaway Skids Tailgate 3-way story.
I think that's the sound it makes.
Well, that has to be better than what happened in the final issue of X Factor.
Do I want to know what sound that makes?
Well, no, but it pretty much ended with like everybody sort of just hanging out and being okay, but Danger and Warlock make out. By, like, merging together in this floating ball that glows. Like, they become a disco ball of robots.
Yeah, sorry, that's not how it really works in reality. It's way more disappointing.
Yeah.
Oh, for people, sure, but what about robots?
I guess.
Space robots.
Disco ball.
Yeah.
So anyway, do we want to move on from sad robots to horrible murder?
Sure.
Why would you ever want to move on from sad robots?
Okay. Well, this entry in the Dick Tracy Mythos comes courtesy of the Collins Case Files, Volume 1, which has the first set of stories from new Dick Tracy writer Max Allen Collins, or new as of 1978.
Oh, wow. Okay, I've heard of him. As someone who worked in used bookstores for a few years, I've heard of him.
Yeah, the Road to Perdition guy.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I know Road to Perdition.
And, you know, he's also done some stuff in regular comics. He was the one who reintroduced Jason Todd and made him a car thief, and everybody hated him.
Yeah, actually, that's terrible.
Well, I think the idea was that Jason Todd wasn't supposed to be as terrible, but he started out before the crisis as this straight-up Dick Grayson clone. So they wanted to make him different from Dick Grayson, and they went too far the other direction?
That is the danger.
Yeah, I think this volume contains all of the stories January 1978 to January 1979. We have Angel Top's Last Stand, The Return of Half and Half, and Big Boy's Revenge.
Big Boy as in the restaurant?
As in the guy who was played by, was it Al Pacino in the Dick Tracy movie?
I think it was Al Pacino.
Al Pacino, oh god.
Wow.
Who does not actually look anything like his movie counterpart. They took some liberties there. Yeah, and it's like, apparently the first story in this with Angel Top, who is Flat Top's daughter, because the entire extended Flat Top Jones family has his head except for his brother. This was the story that got Collins the job from the Chicago Tribune, because apparently, his history with Dick Tracy Collins, that is, he apparently wrote Chester Gould when he was like 8 years old, saying, "One day I'm going to take over Dick Tracy from you." And then he grew up and actually took over Dick Tracy from Chester Gould.
I mean, I guess alternately, that's super creepy. That's either adorable or super creepy.
As long as you say it when you're a kid.
Someday I'm going to become you.
I'll become you. I'll crawl inside you and do your work. Anyway,
replace you.
So we're introduced to Angel Top Jones, Angelica Jones, a.k.a. Angel Top, who got that name because she owns a wig company.
Sure.
Why not? And she has hooked up with, well, go ahead, Jen. What?
I just said, sure, we'll go with that. That's the reason.
Yeah, well, she has hooked up with the son of the Brow, who was another notorious Dick Tracy villain from the 1940s, who has the distinction of having perhaps the most gruesome of the gruesome deaths in Dick Tracy, insofar as he fell out of a police story window and was skewered through the torso by an American flagpole.
Ooh, yikes.
Well, to be fair, he was a Nazi.
America!
And it is Angel Top's goal to have revenge on Dick Tracy for the death of both her father and her brother. And as part of this, she goes on a book tour. I mean, it's not a very well-conceived plan in retrospect, because, you know, if you're going on a book tour railing against Dick Tracy and police brutality and things like that, you probably don't want to try to murder the guy who you're railing against? I don't know. It seems like that undercuts your argument.
Yeah.
But in comparison, the Brow's son, I guess he didn't know his father very well, and, like, you know, plus he was a Nazi. But he fell in love with Angelica Jones and goes along with her plan to get revenge on the police. And probably the weirdest thing about him is he isn't named. He's either called the Brow's son or Angel Top's lover. He's never identified, like, as Brow Jr. or whatever. And for a character who appears for, like, several months of comic strips, that seemed weird. But anyway, Brow Jr. and Dick Tracy and Angel Top do manage to kidnap Dick Tracy out of a hotel lobby, and they take him to the site of where Flat Top Sr. was killed, which was a replica of the Santa Maria in the City Park Lagoon, where Flat Top drowned. And, I mean, Dick Tracy is, like, nominally in Chicago, although they never call it out as Chicago, and I don't know if that city has a replica of a Columbus ship just sitting in a lagoon.
Columbus, Ohio does. I mean, not a lagoon.
Well, no, it's a Columbus ship, the Santa Maria.
Right. Right, that's what I mean, is that we have one of those in Columbus.
Didn't Walkie get married on it?
Yes.
Right.
Oh, I thought it was a pirate ship.
No, it was not a pirate ship. It was a replica, I think, of the Santa Maria.
Oh, well, maybe that's where Collins got it from, then, assuming it was around in 1978.
Probably, because I can't imagine it was built too long since then.
So yeah, Angel Top's scheme, she's going to stick Dick Tracy in the crevasse of the ship where her father died and going to drown him. Or at least, you know, if he can't keep his head above water after several hours, he will drown. And let's see, of course, the cops, Liz and Sam Ketchum and mid-70s creation Groovy Grove are on the tail of Angel Top.
Don't say.
Shootout aboard the Santa Maria. Spilled kerosene ignites and a fallen Liz. She is in danger of being burned. Yeah, I guess Angel Top managed to knock her out, but she doesn't... Well, I mean, she's a main character, so, you know, she's fine. And let's see. Angel Top hesitates. To escape would risk drowning like Flat Top, her father. No! A flame-eaten wall gives away. Into the waters that claimed Flat Top, her father. So goes Angel Top, with her hair on fire. So, spoilers, she doesn't die. She comes back later.
Is she bald? When she comes back later?
I don't think that story has actually been reprinted, so I don't know.
Ah.
But Dick Tracy manages to undo his bindings by using the very nail that snagged Flat Top's coat and helped him drown years ago. So, you know, dramatic irony there. And basically, you know, both Tracy and Liz manage to pull through, except it's winter and the lagoon is frozen over, and so there's just a couple strips where ice, can they get through it? And Dick Tracy just straight up punches through the ice that's frozen over the lagoon.
Wow! What a badass.
Yeah, and, oh, well, I left out this part at the beginning, but one thing Collins did was bring back an old secondary character named Vitamin Flintheart, who is very Jonathan Harris.
You know, Dr. Smith, right?
Yeah, the Lost in Space actor. Let's see, where is the... And his character gimmick is he is a health food nut, and he's always drinking Bromo. Oh. Which I do not actually know what Bromo is.
So, maybe it was a sponsor?
That's derived from bromine. It's people used to take for digestion. Like, I don't think they have in, like, 50 years, but they used to.
Back in the old days.
Yeah, and the story actually starts out with Vitamin getting shot by the Browse son because apparently he had a hand in taking Flat Top down originally. And the tail end of the Angel Top story is that the Browse son is released by the DA because he had his constitutional rights violated while he was being taken into custody aboard the flaming duplicate of the Santa Maria.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and...
Those cops need to do a better job.
Richard, what's this I hear about the scoundrel who shot me getting off scot-free? Sad but true, Vitamin. The Browse son had his constitutional rights violated, says the DA. And that is the last the Browse son appears in the entire volume. So, you know, he cut off with shooting somebody.
The end. That's sort of an unsatisfying ending.
Well, Angel Top dies, supposedly. I mean, not really, because they never find her body, even in the epilogue of the story. And you know, they never find a body, they're coming back.
Yeah.
And the kind of other part of the tail end is the Brow going to the city lagoon with his arm in a sling and throwing the reef into it. And you can see the burned out hulk of the Santa Maria in the distance. And there's a sign. It was here, public enemy number one, Flat Top Jones, drowned attempting to elude a manhunt led by Detective Dick Tracy, City Historical Society.
Man, Dick Tracy's city must have the most awesome commemorative plaques. Seriously? The city's just, you could just go on a tour and visit all the places where Dick Tracy has murdered somebody.
Somebody with a ridiculous, like, mobster name.
I think there's actually a Dick Tracy statue in Chicago.
That wouldn't surprise me, since I think he's owned by the Chicago Tribune or Tribune Media Services. I mean, that's what led to the whole Funky Winkerbean crossover.
apparently, looking up, there was a Santa Maria in Chicago until, like, 1913 when it left for San Francisco.
Weird.
Oh.
So, at one point, there was one. The point in the comic.
Well, Flat Top drowned in, like, 1944, and Chester Gould was born in, like, 1900. So, theory, he would have been alive when the Santa Maria was in Chicago?
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, he would have been a teenager. No way, he wasn't living in Chicago as a teenager. He's actually from Oklahoma, of all places.
Huh. Oh.
And yes, apparently there is a statue of Dick Tracy in Naperville, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago.
Ah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I don't know if you want me going into the rest of the stories in this volume, since I don't know how long have I been on this?
A little while.
Okay, well, let's see. Well, Half and Half is basically Two-Face, but apparently he was created independently, like... I don't know that Chester Gould ever read newspaper comics. Not newspaper comics. He was in comic books.
On newspaper comics.
Well, yeah, might have been based off that same movie poster that Dick Tracy was based on.
Uh-huh.
There's a movie poster for the 30s version of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. That has the lead actor's face split in half like that.
Yeah, and to be honest, the character with it. Two sides of a face isn't really that original. Anyone could do it. It's
it's not the most original idea anyone has ever had.
Well, Google attributed it to a coffee creamer.
Okay.
That's what I'm contributing, or that's what I'm attributing all my character creation to. Coffee creamer.
Well, you know, it's half and half.
Yeah.
Hey, that's where you get the name.
But yeah, the Half and Half story, it's not bad. I mean, I was looking through it again, and mostly, you know, it's another kind of revenge story, except Half and Half isn't going after Dick Tracy. He's going after the woman who sent him up to prison. And I guess, you know, that's what it was. There was an edict that Collins got when he started on the strip that he was supposed to do at least one story a year featuring a classic Dick Tracy villain to I guess, drum up publicity. And the entire first year is either people descended from Dick Tracy villains or returning villains that Chester Gould came up with.
Because most of the good ones were dead.
Basically. Although, well, yeah, that's how you got the daughter of Flat Top, who died, and the son of the Brow, who died. And
because Dick Tracy just goes around murdering people.
It's a chill.
Professional murderizer.
Yeah.
I will say, like, of the stories in this particular volume, it probably has the best death trap. Half and Half manages to capture Liz. I don't know that she, like, had any history with him or anything, but, you know, she's a police detective, he's an arch criminal, you know, he catches her. And he places her, like, under a small end table by the entrance to his hideout, and puts a jar full of lye on the table. So if anyone busts in from the front, she's going to get a face full of lye.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's not the most creative death trap, but, you know, it's still potentially gruesome.
Mm.
Yeah, it's kind of awful.
Ah.
Well, it's... Half and Half is apparently a multiple murderer anyway. So you kind of have to expect that from him.
Yeah.
But, let's see... Half and Half gets his face restored by a plastic surgeon named Will Carver... Uh-huh. Work out the pun for yourself.
Why? Why?
And he is released by the city. It's a prison work release program to the city zoo, which I don't think they usually do that for murderers.
Yeah, it, that's kind of a... That's a cushy job there.
Well, he started out as a circus... Well, not as a circus freak, but as, like, a circus animal. No, wait, he was a circus freak, but he also handled animals.
Oh, okay.
Because he had his scarred face from a botched robbery attempt, a tanker truck accident. He landed, like, half-face down in acid. Yeah, so at the zoo, Half and Half... steals a poisonous snake from the reptile pit, which he's going to use on the woman who sent him up to jail, because the bite of the reptile will probably be written off as a heart attack.
Okay. Sure. Go ahead, Two-Face, or Half and Half.
Not Two-Face.
I guess maybe back... Wait, this was in the 70s?
Well, Half and Half premiered in the 60s and Two-Face premiered in the 40s.
Yeah, I think that the police might look for snake bite marks around that time.
Yeah.
Well, check for evidence. Especially with Dick Tracy around, he's going to be looking for evidence.
Well, he would have gotten away from it.
If away it wasn't from it? Just meddling kids.
Yeah. He would have gotten away with it if... well, the woman's name is Zelda, and she's also a circus worker. She's a high diver. You know, dives
from
a...
Is she from Hyrule?
This would have preceded The Legend of Zelda.
Yeah. Unless
there's, like, a 1970s disco version of The Legend of Zelda we've never heard of.
Maybe there is.
Yeah, so she was on the phone with Dick Tracy, who was calling to tell her that, you know, this guy you sent up the river has been paroled, and this immediately precedes her being bitten by the poisonous snake. I guess Half and Half didn't notice her on the phone. I don't know why he thought that was a good idea.
Well, maybe he's blind in that in the eye on the bad side.
Maybe, although he had gotten it fixed up. With the rest of the plastic surgery, but I don't know if Will Carver was also an
optometrist.
Yeah, okay, so Half and Half has used a poisonous snake he stole from his zoo job to poison the woman who sent him up the river, who was on the phone with Dick Tracy at the time he was trying to commit this murder, and So she gets to the hospital and gets the anti-venom, and she's not dead now.
Good.
And, I mean, not quite, I'm not, she doesn't take being snake-bitten lying down, literally. She sneaks out of the hospital. And on the way, she steals a chemical cleanser and an ambulance.
Oh.
And so she drives to the zoo where Half and Half is feeding the lions, and she tosses the, what is it, liquid Drain X, danger, avoid skin contact, a full-strength drain cleaner, which she throws in Half and Half's face, which undoes his plastic surgery.
Oh.
Sure.
And so now he is crazed and in pain, and he takes Zelda and throws her into the lion pit.
Whoa.
Convenient lion pit.
Well, he was
did
just
he,
feeding the
did
lions.
He hold,
oh, yeah.
Did he hold her above his head for a moment and be like, do-do-do-do-do, before he threw her in?
No, stop.
He did hold her over his head, but he didn't make any sounds. Oh, and even Dick Tracy. Let her go, Half and Half. Let her go. All right. Toss.
Oh,
oh no.
Never say that.
That's on Dick Tracy's head.
I think that's on the writer's head. I'm sorry.
Not literally on Dick Tracy's head, I assume, because I assume he wasn't in the pit himself.
No, but he was lowered down into the lion pit to try to save Zelda from the lions.
Oh, well, that's
how'd
nice.
That go?
Try.
Well, he doesn't shoot any lions, but he does fire into the air to scatter them off.
Well, no, the lions didn't commit any crimes legally.
Well, they're already in prison.
Yeah.
Did he save Zelda?
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
You reckon that's the true story of David and the Lion's Den? Like God lowered down like an angel in a yellow trench coat to fire off a pistol?
No.
I like that idea.
No. Just no.
Come on. The Bible would be so much better with more deliberately ironic deaths and
and lying.
I just use the word deliberately there. And yellow trench coats. You've got to admit it.
Sometimes it does seem like it's written as if it was a daily strip, but
it sure as hell was.
It changed
the story of Moses especially reads like a bloody newspaper comic strip.
Hey, don't look at me. I'm a heathen. My stuff is literally comic strips now.
Well, I will say the day-to-day pacing of the Max Allen Collins Dick Tracy strip period is very good. There isn't a lot of repeated art or anything like that, which you kind of expect to see on a daily strip that's an adventure, you know, a continuity.
Yeah, like bricks that keep falling on Spider-Man's head.
Yeah, I mean, the standard setup with, I guess, maybe the Spider-Man strip and a few others is, you see the final panel from yesterday, a new panel today.
Oh, you mean that one.
And then a third panel, which is then the first panel of the next day's strip.
Yes.
Okay, so now we have Half and Half. He threw Zelda into the lion pit. He escaped from the zoo.
He made a horrible pun.
Yeah, well, he is an arch criminal.
Yeah, I guess.
So he made his escape from the zoo. He goes to see the plastic surgeon, Dr. Will Carver, I remind you, who fixed him up in the first place. And Carver, he's not really on the up and up.
You don't say.
Yeah, so he agrees to fix Half and Half's face, but he wants $50,000 in return.
Oh.
So
felt a little greedy.
And this isn't 70s money.
Right.
This isn't our economy.
Which he explains, I lead a rather high life, gambling debts, a lady with expensive tastes. My wife's tastes, too, are expensive. And, you know, Dick Tracy shows up at Carver's. Carver doesn't hand half and half over because he wants the $50,000. And so, that's how half and half gets Liz, because she was there with Dick Tracy at Carver's apartment trying to get info out of him. So I should probably mention at some point that Half and Half does have a real name. He is Tulsa Tucson, which seems to be Tulsa Tucson, but with Z's, and nobody knows why.
Sure. In or out of the comic?
Basically, no. All right, so it's Half and Half's idea to kidnap Liz to get the state to pay up the $50,000 to him. And, of course, you know, the state doesn't hand out ransom money, but they can't tell Half and Half that. So they try to work out where his hideout is. And then Half and Half sets up the death trap with Liz under the table of the front door with the cup of lye above her. And Tracy and Ketchum, they figure out where he's located by doing, like, a cross-examination of, like, where... Well, remember, this is before cell phones, so Half and Half had to use a phone booth.
Uh-huh.
So they had to figure out where there was a phone booth by a truck stop and a railroad crossing, because those were the sounds they heard in the background.
Ah, that old classic.
So Sam and Dick Tracy manage to figure this out. They go to rescue Liz. Half and Half is on the way back from having made another phone call. Dick Tracy, he shoots him through the shoulder. So, you know, he's not dead. And then he begins to go through the front door, and Half and Half starts laughing like crazy. And Dick Tracy just stops busting the door down with his boot. So Liz does not get a face full of lie.
That's generous of him.
Yes. Very considerate.
Yes.
And so the story ends with Half and Half in police custody again, possibly now going actually insane because he had his new face again and then he lost it.
Was it the same half?
Yes.
Ah.
I mean, I guess it being a different half would have at least been novel.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the end of that continuity, and we begin the next one, but I think I've been on this one for a while. And I would generally recommend Colin's work on Dick Tracy, I think. I mean, he does have some fanboy moments later on where... have you heard about the time Dick Tracy went to the moon?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Well, wait, hasn't that storyline actually started up again in the current comic?
Yeah, they're bringing the moon people back.
I like that.
Right.
It's ridiculous,
right.
But it's continuity.
Yeah.
Collins was the one who killed off Junior Tracy's moon wife.
Oh.
No.
All right.
Sad.
I seem to recall there's also a bit in that series of strips about diplomatic relationships being broken off with the moon.
Yes, the moon governor broke off diplomatic relations with the Earth. Because the leader of the moon is a governor.
Just a governor.
Not like a president or just a governor.
Yeah, but I mean, even with that stuff, I mean, it basically works within the story, and probably my largest complaint with the work is that he doesn't do a really good original villain until the third year, and unfortunately that's where the reprint volumes end. He did like 11 years worth of Dick Tracy and we've only got three of them.
Oh, hopefully there'll be more, or is this old stuff?
Well, these reprints were from 2003, and I don't know why they stopped it.
Is IDW doing Dick Tracy?
They're doing the classic Dick Tracy.
I mean, they might they've kept going with Peanuts, although really that's all Charles Schulz, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, and there are like a handful of Collins stories reprinted in other books, which for that worked against me because the Collins Case Files Volume 1 had two stories I'd read already. But, you know, for someone just getting into it, it's like maybe $5 on Amazon as a used book, so... Say, if you're curious, maybe check it out. And I guess we'll save Jim and the Holograms for next time.
Okay. And now, is everybody ready for some football?
Well, no, because we've been hearing a hurricane. Okay.
All my rowdy friends are here, and we're going to be talking football. Tomorrow is the Super Bowl. I guess by the time you listen to it, the Super Bowl will have come and gone. So please travel back in time, tell me who won, and we will split the money Biff Tannen style.
By football, do you mean like American football?
Yes, like gridiron football.
Yes.
Yeah.
As opposed to soccer or Australian rules football.
The proper football with a properly shaped ball made out of pig hide.
Yes, and inflated to varying degrees depending on whether you are the Patriots or any of the other teams.
We
are not getting into that.
To point out, we have four professional codes of football in Australia. So we have rugby league, rugby union, AFL, and soccer here. But we don't have your thingy. Well,
AFL is the Australian rules football?
Yeah.
That's like four segments or something instead of three instead of four or something.
Anyway, the point is we're talking about the NFL, and specifically NFL Super Pro. The licensed company.
Oh, it's an abbreviation. Like, I've had a couple of these comments before. I always thought it was NFL, but...
Yes, NFL Super Pro.
That explains it.
What?
After all this time.
Right, so, during four 12 issues in the early 90s, Marvel writers
really
took the opportunity.
That.
No, I didn't really think that. Oh my god. Jay.
In the early 90s, Marvel writers were given the opportunity to get free Jets tickets by writing this terrible licensed comic book about a football superhero with football powers, all branded by the National Football League.
Jets, Jets, Jets.
Just end the season.
Well, they kind of did. I think they went out early.
They didn't even make the playoffs. The Jets are terrible.
Yeah.
Anyway.
They used to be okay, I think.
Yeah, in like the 60s.
Oh, I thought they were in the 80s.
Anyway. Every superhero comic, of course, needs supervillains, and the primary villain of NFL Super Pro, who hired most of his other villains, was Marco Sanzonier, alias Sanction. And the first thing that you're going to notice is that this guy is cosplaying Unicron.
He really is.
He's got the helmet, he's got the chest, he's kind of got the legs.
Well, it's hard to tell with the angle on the arc. He's got the boot, I think.
He's got the little cross thing on his abdomen, and that really sells it to me.
Yes.
Yeah, the defined abs is like Unicron's trademark. Well, that in his helmet. This is the helmet without the horns.
Anyway, there's a reason
for him. He's wearing Galvatron's legs.
There's a reason for him to look like a Transformer, because he was created by longtime Transformers artist Jose Delbo.
That'll do it.
So even, I don't know if Delbo ever drew Robot Mode Unicron, but he would have had access to all those model sheets.
Yeah.
And thus he did a little recycling because, well, actually he lived in, like, he's from what, Argentina?
Originally.
Yeah, like that.
Buenos Aires. He probably wouldn't have had much use for Jets tickets.
that's right. Starscream once attacked Buenos Aires because Delbo was from there. He chose three great cities to attack. He chose New York, Tokyo, and Buenos Aires.
Yes.
Which makes him literally the only villain in history to make that three.
He doesn't know. He's not first.
So initially, this guy was just straight up like the bad guy from an 80s action movie. He's involved in drugs, smuggling. He's kind of got like an 80s business mullet.
Yeah.
Yes, with the businessman ponytail.
Yes.
Really business.
And then for whatever reason, his minions kept encountering NFL Super Pro, and to counter them, he kept hiring football-themed villains.
So he
hired Quick Kick, who is not the member of G.I. Joe, but a football player turned homicidal ninja.
Okay. That doesn't seem like the body type would really be compatible between football players and ninjas.
I mean, not all football players are really big guys. He could have been like a running back.
Yeah, if he's called Quick Kick.
Football player turned ninja sounds very G.I. Joe. Like, if you.
Yeah, kind of that.
He trained under the fridge.
Oh my goodness.
Well, you know, sometimes you do have the big hulking ninja.
That's true. And anyway, with that having failed, he then hired the Instant Replay, who is kind of looks like Snake Eyes, actually.
Cyborg Snake Eyes.
And he has, like, time travel powers.
Oh.
Okay.
That's a thing.
Yeah. Because, you know, Instant Replay, which is kind of a clever name.
I suppose that's kind of a clever name for a football-themed time-traveling character.
So
for
this
some
just,
reason, need to have that.
This just not was working out, so he decided to get his own suit of super armor that looked like Unicron and fight Super Pro himself as sanction.
Like a very normal Marvel Comics thing to do as a villain.
You know, it's like the Untouchables. You know, he pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of your guys to the hospital, you send two of his to the morgue. He shows up in a suit of football-themed super armor. You get one that makes you sound like Orson Welles. It's the Marvel Comics way.
It's true. It's a time-honored tradition.
It's weird because Jose Delbo's generic Transformers never looked this convincingly like a generic Transformer.
Kind of, like, yeah. This is a really good one.
He used to draw these weedy robots with thin...
like pipe cleaner limbs.
Yeah.
Pipe cleaner arms and stuff like that. And like big circular hinge joints like they were out of the 1940s.
Yeah, whereas this guy actually has kibble on his arms.
Yeah.
He's
clearly got Galvatron's bottom half with Unicron's top half slapped on top.
I mean, maybe editorial just told him, draw him like a Transformer.
Well, editorial, according to the credits at the bottom, would have been Bob Budiansky.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Bob was like, just draw him like a Transformer.
Maybe Bob threw off a little sketch. Here, do this.
Aw.
Give me Unicron, Charlie.
Can you get a scantily clad woman on that cover?
No, well, if that was true, Bob would have drawn the cover himself.
That's true. Maybe evading some kind of slavering monster. That's kind of my thing.
Is the NFL Super Pro's real name actually Phil?
Yes. Phil Grayfield.
Phil Grayfield. Now that, my friend, is a superhero name. You know, once you name your kid Phil Grayfield, you just know he's going to grow up to be a football-themed superhero. I can't comprehend NFL Super Pro. It just... There's nothing...
That's because you're not American.
Nothing about it makes any sense to me.
You're not American enough.
Well, the fact
that amusingly, not only did he try and kill Super Pro with this, he also had it like a booby-trapped football field of death.
Well, of course. That was probably...
It had spikes, railguns, lasers.
He was really committed to this theme.
Oh, yeah.
Most of what I know about Gridiron comes from Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. So, just baffling to me, this thing. Like, I'm sitting here going, why can they throw the ball forwards? I don't understand this game.
Why would you do that?
Out.
Gotta get the right spiral.
Yeah, I don't football either.
So, unsurprisingly, this didn't work. He also tried to hire Crossbones to kill a Super Pro, which also didn't work.
That should have worked. That's a better idea.
Yeah. And
Crossbones is good at killing people.
Yeah, it's... Yes. Well, has he done it really successfully recently? Last time I saw him, Deadpool was kicking his butt and stuffing him into a hot air balloon.
That's embarrassing.
Yes,
yeah,
it was.
That's shameful.
But he did get away in the end, so he's still at large. So, is there a place in the Marvel Universe for a guy who really likes football and also likes dressing up as mix-and-match Transformers?
Well, I mean, we have reached an era of comics where you have Sauron just declaring that he just wants to turn people into dinosaurs. So, I think we're reaching a level of parody where you could bring back characters like that.
Dude, there's only one place this guy can appear in. A Death's Bro. Head limited series.
Yeah, that'd be a good place, I guess.
Because what you get is this guy still wants to kill the NFL Super Pro or something like that.
And he
hires Death's Head to do it.
Brilliant.
And yet somehow Death's Head is swayed by the power of football to not kill him.
Oh no, Death's Head straight out killed him.
Yeah, Death's Head just kills him.
Or, you know, he goes to see him, but, you know, Super Pro has got, like, real bad concussion issues.
Yeah,
so he feels real bad about it.
Can't kill him. He's already troubled enough.
And, honestly, you know, given this guy's rampant criminality and disregard for human life, this guy should own an NFL team now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or soccer. Ooh, he works for FIFA now.
Ooh. He's shaking down payments from potential host cities in his Unicron suit.
Yes.
Or maybe just have him fight Captain Britain, because it turns out that the entire time he just hated people in red, white, and blue outfits.
There is a certain similarity in design
between the NFL Super Pro and Captain Britain. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Super Pro is kind of like an American version of Captain Britain in the ridiculousness of his outfit.
I think the American version of Captain Britain is Captain America.
I know, but...
Well, wait. Maybe Sanction goes after the British version of the NFL Super Pro. Which I guess would be...
English Premier League Super Pro.
Yes!
Or Cricket Pro.
Manchester United Super
Pro.
Yeah,
EPL Super Pro.
Or he could try and kill US-1, and then attack Team America. And it would
I don't
just
think
be
trucking's
like...
really a sport.
Competitive trucking.
I can't think of a lot of Marvel heroes who were former professional athletes. I guess Northstar used to be an Olympic skier.
Yeah.
What about Night Thrasher? Does he count?
Skateboarding is, I guess, the X Games. I don't think he ever did it professionally, as he was too busy seeking vengeance.
Or being a CEO?
Yes, he was like Batman meets the Punisher on a skateboard.
Oh, so he's funding the X Games now.
He may be funded. Well, I mean, he's currently, you know, rotting because he's dead. But
That's easily fixed.
Yes.
That can be fixed in a teaser image for a comic that didn't continue.
I think that was supposed to be the other Night Thrasher, his half-brother.
Oh.
Now, it seems like there should have been a few sports-themed guys in the Contest of Champions.
Surprisingly not, I don't think, even though that was supposed to replace the Olympics.
Well, maybe the new Secret War won't be an actual war. It'll be a series of sporting events.
Oh.
Secret Olympics.
Secret Olympics.
Or no, the Secret Bowl.
And then you'd have all this and Secret Bowl 2.
Oh, yeah, they have to do it every year because it was so popular. Mojo's got this whole thing hooked up.
Held under cover of darkness, every player wears an identity-concealing helmet. The Halftime Acts, Daft Punk, and The Residents.
No, Lila Cheney.
That's
yes.
Not a secret, though.
I mean, but this guy is basically Vince McMahon, isn't he?
He's a little Vince McMahon.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, certainly has his hairline.
Again, starting his own football league, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what was it, the XFL?
The XFL, this could be the Sanction Football League.
Yeah.
And, like, he fields teams that are entirely like B-list supervillains, looking for a paycheck.
The Suffle?
I'm always surprised that there isn't as much supervillain athletic things in the Marvel Universe.
And it's pretty really much just the Unlimited Class Wrestling Federation.
Yeah, and even that doesn't pop up that much. That should be going constantly. That should be the WWE. That should be happening all the time.
Like, and also, I guess that's sports entertainment, not sports.
Yeah. And this guy should start that. If not football, at least wrestling. Some kind of sport. Lots of villains who need jobs. Just need a little bit of money to keep themselves off the street.
Or, you know, like a made-up sport, like rollerball or something.
Oh, yeah, something. Running.
Well, what was that kind of sport, kind of death game thing that killed Nightwatch?
That was the Great Game, which was kind of, it was sort of like a real-life pro wrestling, where, like, rich guys had sponsored various supervillains to fight each other.
See, that's a good idea, but that's not a long-term investment. That's not going to earn you money years down the line. You're going to run out of your big names.
I mean, they're supposed to kill each other.
There's an issue of Power Pack where they go to a baseball game.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're regular sports. I mean, Peter Parker is
by the way,
Mets
was not
fan.
Meant to be in any way helpful.
No.
it succeeded.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and the Power Pack baseball issue was an anti-racism one, because I don't know if I should go into that or not. It's irrelevant, but yeah, whatever.
Power Pack is always irrelevant. That's why I love them.
Always both irrelevant and totally relevant.
That's exactly right.
And so I assume that's a request to do the Boogeyman as our appendectomy next time.
If you want to bring the snark, you have to mention Power Pack.
That's terrible.
It's not terrible. It's perfect. It is a perfectly formed joke, and you love it.
I only hate it because I didn't come up with it myself.
Oh my gosh. No, I think this guy's done. I think he did his job.
Yeah.
Villain, maybe, but as some of his other villains.
I think when your hero is NFL Super Pro, you're done.
Yeah, but the problem is I think this guy's actually better than NFL Super Pro deserved.
You're just saying that because he dresses like Unicron.
Yes, admittedly, he's a real good dresser. And I kind of miss those, like, the slicked back hair 80s and 90s villains.
No, he's totally like Davi in License to Kill.
Or what was the bad guy in the third Karate Kid movie?
Oh, right, that guy who owns like an evil karate empire.
Yeah, that's basically what this guy is.
I mean, I don't think this guy knows karate.
Well, no.
You know who he could attack? Dazzler at a halftime show.
Yeah, that'll work.
He's totally a Dazzler villain. Like, perfect.
Yeah.
He's attempting to juice his ratings by causing a super villainous costume malfunction.
Not his own, I hope.
No.
Of course.
No.
I mean, costume malfunction on that, you're going to need, you know, a crowbar and possibly the Matrix of Leadership.
Well, when he was floating, he was covering one of his nipples.
All right, well, I think it's time for this episode to proceed on its way to oblivion. And so, for the 80-page cast, I'm Rob London, and I know now why you cry.
Hailing from parts unknown, I am David Henyon.
I am Jen Ulm, and I don't watch this wrestling stuff.
I don't watch it anymore, really. Well, some old stuff.
Well, signing off from Crimeland, I'm Matt Karpowicz.
And I'm Andrew Sarahan, and I'm the girl who could be you.
Yeah. Hope not.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's like how a werewolf is okay when he's human and okay when he's a werewolf, but in between it's all... Oh.
Yeah, it's a lot like that.
And yes. Then Blue Moon plays Blue Moon.
What werewolf movies are you watching?
Standing alone. American Werewolf in London, son.
Oh, right. Right.
Yeah. Oh. Jeez, I haven't seen that in years. I don't even remember that.
Ah. Nobody all right. Are we all ready to begin?
Fuck yes. No.
Yes.
All right.